Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. A few weeks ago, I received an email from Jada, a young woman that was exposed to the dangers and tragedy of the surrogacy industry as a young child. She shared with me her childhood story about the untimely passing of her mother from complications after a surrogate pregnancy. Graciously, Jada agreed to come on Venus Rising to share her story with the masses. Now, as a young adult, Jada lives in Orange County with her husband and is an undergraduate student studying theology at Grand Canyon University. So today we welcome Jada as she gives us an eyewitness account into her mother's surrogacy pregnancy and the complications and loss that followed. Welcome to the show, Jada.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much. I love Venus Rising.
I love hearing that. No, I'm so glad that you were listening in and emailed me. And I just really am thankful that you agreed. First that you reached out and then that you agreed to share your story. So thank you so much. And I hope our listeners, I know our listeners are going to glean so much from listening to you today. So why don't we get started? So tell us a little bit about your story. Let's start with, how old were you when your mother decided to become a surrogate mother? And do you know much about why she decided to embark on that monumental task?
Yeah, so I was 7 when my mom became a surrogate, but I was 8 when she passed away. She decided to become a surrogate because she had quite a few friends that had gone through a lot of infertility issues, and that just like broke her heart because like I'm her oldest and then I'm my younger brother. She had 2 really easy pregnancies with us, loved being pregnant, wanted to have more kids, but my dad had like shut down the factory, so no more kids. So she decided that being a surrogate would probably be the best route just because she had just a very giving and kind heart and wanted everyone else to experience like the beauties of having a child. So That's really where she started on the journey because she just saw people with infertility issues. She was matched with a family in New York and they just like hit it right off the bat. They liked my dad. My dad liked them. They're just like the sweetest people ever. So yeah, that's kind of how they got started. She got pregnant pretty easy. They didn't have to do many other trials. They did use an egg donor, but they used the father's sperm. So my mom's
And where were you guys involved. Located? Where were you guys located when, were you in Orange County still or?
No, we were in Kansas. So I'm originally from Kansas. I moved to Orange County like by myself without my family about 4 years ago. But yeah, we were in Kansas and they were all the way in Manhattan. So it was kind of an interesting disconnect because they were so far away. But yeah, but it was cool still that we were just like this kind of simple Midwest family. But like we had friends in New York, thought that was the coolest thing as a kid.
So were you excited? Did you think that you understood? Like how did your mother tell you and your brother that she was going to be pregnant with a baby that wouldn't be staying in your house?
So my brother was like 3, hardly remembers the whole experience, but I understood it very well because I remember my brother and her being pregnant with my younger brother. So I was pretty excited for her to be pregnant again just because like I loved hanging out with her. Like after school, we would like watch Oprah and eat like our snacks and she'd eat her pregnancy cravings and I would eat them with her. And I thought it was super fun, but I did think it was a little weird that like the babies weren't going to be coming home with us. Cause I wanted to have more siblings that were younger. Cause I was naturally even younger as like a nurturing person. So I thought it was a little weird that the babies weren't coming home with us, but like, I loved seeing my mom pregnant. I thought it was a super fun experience. I remember just like the weirdest thing as a kid, just seeing her like take the shots, like the hormone shots at first, thought that was very bizarre. Every week we would take photos together. I would help in the hallway of taking photos of her progress to send to the family in New York, because they wanted to keep in really close contact and see how she was doing and how the progress of her pregnancy was coming along. But yeah, as a kid, it was just weird because I wanted to have more siblings. Love my brother, but I wanted more. Mm-hmm. And to know that she was having twins and they were going to be girls, I was a little sad that I wasn't going to have sisters like in the house with me.
Yeah. Did you view them still as your sisters? Did you
They're my womb sisters is what I call them. They're my womb sisters because we've all shared the same womb, but obviously they're not blood related to me.
Sure. Do you know is there ever been a relationship with the egg donor or are you?
There's never been a relationship with the egg donor. No, they know like the features and the qualities that was given through the agency that they went through for the eggs, which is interesting now seeing them as tween girls. They have one of the twins has very similar interests to the egg donor and has similar looks to what they saw with the egg donor, but there is no relationship with them. And I think they're okay with that just because from a very young age, it was not hidden that they came from an egg donor. That was never hidden from them. Their commissioning mother told them everything basically from the time they were two, that they were not from her eggs.
I see.
She kept it very open about it.
And was she open as well about them having come from a surrogate as well?
Yes. Always had a picture of my mom in their room. They have like a little book of their story and how their family's just different than everyone else. Hmm. So I think the way surrogacy is really tough for everyone around. And of course my story was really hard, but seeing how their mom has handled this whole process over a decade has just been, I don't know if she could do it better, really, and really keeping the girls informed on how their whole process of how they became to be in the world was completely upfront and honest. And they never felt that deception or wondering, really.
Yeah, because we have some folks who've been on our show or that I know personally that are donor conceived and, you know, they find out about it and then they find their biological father or mother. And they're like, wow, we have so many things in common that I didn't have in common with the family that raised me that I thought I was biologically related to. So it's very interesting that you're able to see that in these girls, but we're jumping way ahead, which I love. And you brought it, like I had several questions. I'm like, oh, she's hitting that question, you know? So that's great. But let's back up a little bit more. So your mother decides to be a surrogate mother. You are seven, your brother is three. And you kind of shared with us about that. Was your mother, do you know, was this a paid surrogacy or was this altruistic?
It was a paid surrogacy. Okay. I'm not sure how much she was paid, but I do know that it was paid and that like obviously all the health care and her care was covered as well. Because I think my mom's ultimate goal after the surrogacy was to just get a really good part-time job so therefore she could be more of a stay-at-home mom for my brother and I, because that was really the main goal for her, was to become a stay-at-home mom, because I've always had two working parents. But yeah, that was a big deal to her for her to be home before school and after school.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like the flexibility. The money would be like a little bit of a kickstart into that goal.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So your mother was pregnant and it sounded like from your email that the complications with the twin pregnancy didn't happen until after she had delivered the girls. Is that correct? Or can you talk us through now a little bit more on the pregnancy and the delivery and then kind of what happened after that?
Yeah. So the pregnancy was pretty smooth. I mean, she was carrying twins, but you would really never know. Like she was always very comfortable or she hid it very well, but she just was a very good pregnant person, to put it that way. Like she still was able to do things around the house, was pretty active, took my brother and I places still, was able to cook for us still. Like she didn't really ever get sick, like was super. And I think the craziest thing that stood out to me, I know this is kind of a side tangent, she had a friend from her childhood that like went to jail and she's like 7 months pregnant with twins, went to go visit him in jail, like, and like it was nothing. Like she was super calm, collected, just a good pregnant person. like no complications. And then around the time that she was going to deliver, December of 2006, the delivery was as planned. It was a C-section. So mm-hmm. it was a planned C-section just because they're twins. And the procedure went smoothly, so we thought. So the girls came out healthy. My mom came out healthy. But then about 2 days after she gave birth, I remember she was in the hospital room and there was a lot of us in there. She just had this extreme pain, like on the little chart they have like in the hospital, like it was at like a 10 and it was yeah. like in her abdomen, super painful. And they had to like take me out of the room. I remember literally being like dragged out of the room because I was so upset. I was crying. I was screaming, like, because I mean, you're seeing your mother in extreme traumatic pain and I've never seen her wallow in pain ever.
And this was the day after the day of the procedure?
The day after.
So it was kind of a graph. She was fine. And then this pain started coming kind of yeah. out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. And then she called me later and I was like hysterical on the phone. She was like, calm down. Like, I'm Aww. Fine. Like, you're going to be okay. But I mean, obviously I'm still a little traumatized from that because I don't,
but you were
I have a hard Yeah, I have a hard time going in hospitals now because yeah. I just always think of that moment and like thinking that it took her like an hour or two to call me after. So who knows? I didn't know how long she was in pain. Mm-hmm. That I, as a child, I felt helpless because I was like, I can't do anything to help because I was always her little helper mm-hmm. and I couldn't help her in that.
Well, it sounded like situation. You guys were like best friends too, you know, like. It was like kind of the quintessential mother-daughter relationship, you know?
Oh yeah. We crafted together. Like we did everything together.
Yeah.
And I don't know, she exposed me to a lot of like my creative side was exposed from her for sure, mm. as well as my faith. But yeah. And my dad during this time was always with her. So I didn't really have him to lean on. So sure. I had my granny who was really with me and she's still my best friend to this day.
Yeah.
Really helped me walk through that night because I had a really rough night that night seeing her that way. Then she came home a couple days later and this was around Christmas time. So the house was decorated. I remember though she moved a lot slower and that was weird just because she was recovering from a C-section. The nice thing, she didn't really have to cook because my other granny at the time was a caterer. So she cooked everything before, froze it. And we would just like.
Amazing. Amazing.
Meals. It was super fun. I was like, yes, I get all these delicious Southern comforts like every day.
That's awesome.
And then it was around after Christmas, the like very end of December, we had to go to a lot of doctor's appointments. In Kansas City at a bigger hospital because we lived in Lawrence, Kansas, which it's about like a 40-minute drive. So I thought that was just really odd that we kept having to go to like specialty doctors because she had a blood clot they first found in her leg. Mm-hmm. And that was just super bizarre to me. Like all of a sudden my perfectly healthy mother is like having to go to all these doctor's appointments, just having to be stuck in a hospital, like waiting room, coloring, drawing. It was just a very interesting time. And then I'm 8 years old and I start to color this one book that I wrote on like little printer paper, but it was about a girl who lost her mom. And it was very odd that I just had that idea. And then literally 2 weeks later, I lose my mom. So I don't know if God in that time was preparing my heart, but I just still am such a taboo, weird coincidence that I started having those feelings that I was going to lose my mom. And then I lost her. I knew she had a blood clot. I knew she was going to see doctors. And then the last night I was with her, it was business as usual. I was getting ready to go back to school after winter break. We had dinner, like went to bed. It was just very calm and serene. But in the middle of the night, my brother hopped into bed with me. And I didn't know why, but he just hopped into bed with me. And I woke up the next morning and my parents aren't home. It's my very close family friend from church who was there, ready to take care of us to go. She said, like, you're not going to school. We're going to see your mom at the hospital. And I was just very confused. As a kid, I was so confused what was going on. I feel like an adult would be confused, but as a little 8-year-old, I just had no idea what was happening. Then we had to go all the way to Kansas City again to like their bigger hospital. And I just remember I lost her and everyone told me I was waiting in a waiting room. And then I go into her room and all my family's in there just crying. And I refused to look at her though. I didn't see her like in her last moments because she went into a coma in the middle of the night and had to be airlifted. But yeah, it would just like happened really overnight. Like my perfectly healthy mother was just like gone. Cause I knew that it was from complications from the surrogacy, even at the smallest age I knew, cause what else could have been, just putting two and two in my head. But yeah, that was definitely really hard as an 8-year-old for it to happen overnight. Cause most people, when I tell them, oh, I lost my mom at 8, they assume it was cancer. They assume that it was like a car accident, that it just, I saw her sick. And I'm like, I didn't see her really, really sick though. It just happened.
So do you know officially what her cause of death was?
So this is the weird thing. They told us that it was a brain aneurysm, but then they also told me that it was a blood clot. So no one really kind of knew at the end of the day, but we concluded that it was from a blood clot because 2 days before she passed, 2 days from the day she passed, she was supposed to fly to New York to go see a specialist because she was just having a lot of abdominal complications. And we found that all of like the tissues and fluids from her womb had not been properly cleaned out from the surrogacy, from the C-section. So it caused blood clots, and that was really the main cause of death. But
so how did that initially, did you have any feelings for, oh my goodness, like my mom is gone, I've lost my mom, and it's because of this, like because of the surrogacy, how did you process that in particular? Like the fact that her helping or birthing two babies into this world lost her life and left her baby alone.
It was weird because I never saw it that way.
Okay.
I always had this like peace in my heart that I never blamed the twins. I never blamed their mom. I never blamed their family because I loved them. Like they were always there for us, but it was hard because it was like, okay, my mom's just gone and it's just my dad and my brother and I now. Mm-hmm. And it just left like a huge gaping hole in our family. And the person I felt the most angry at was definitely doctors. I did not trust doctors for the longest time because I'm like, you could have saved my mom. You could have caught this beforehand. Why was this able to go on for so long? Like as a little girl, I'd have dreams about like getting really angry and yelling at doctors in the hospital room. Like I was so angry at them because I just felt like the medical system had failed her and she wasn't properly warned. Because at the end of the day, two beautiful little lives were able to come into this world, but she wasn't properly warned of really what could happen, because the agency she went through really made it sound like it was going to be kind of sunshine and rainbows, and that it was harder because it was a pregnancy. But like, I don't think people are properly warned about surrogacy and the impact it doesn't just have on like the family that can't have a baby and like the surrogate who decides, but it's their family too. Like everyone is widely affected by this.
Well, and it's an important point because surrogate women who choose to become surrogate mothers, they have families, right? Like in order to become a surrogate mother, you have to have had children of your own. So every mother that dies from this, which your mother is not alone, unfortunately, they leave behind a family and little ones, typically little ones around your age, you know, which is really heartbreaking. And you're right. The agencies they do make it seem very rainbows and sunshines. You Google, surrogate agencies, and they're all talking about you know, this is a beautiful journey. And, you know, it's very flowery language, which is disappointing. How did the agency treat your family? And again, I know you were seven, so if these questions, you're like, I have no clue, then that's fine. But how do you think that they treated your family after the delivery of the twins? Were they kind of like, were hands off? Like, did they help with the medical bills at all? What was their role after your mother was having these complications?
I can only give like bits and pieces of that because I was just so little and shielded from kind of that side. But from what I can manage is at least the agency didn't just totally leave my family to the wayside. Like they really were they were traumatized by my mom's death because she had had such a healthy pregnancy. It wasn't a difficult pregnancy. So it was a shock to them. I remember they had made like a little tribute video for me and my brother to put kind of like in our little memory boxes. And it was like the interview my mom did for the agency and her whole experience and the people she was in contact with, and that it just seemed like it was really easy. And it was right after she had delivered the twins, like the day she was getting released from the hospital. So they made that for us. But as far as, I don't know, I don't think they paid really for any of the medical bills or anything like that. I think people who were from the agency who had been friends or formed like relationship and friendships with my mom tried to help kind of like with the funds of like funeral and stuff like that. And some had stayed in contact with my like my granny and wrote to her, and but it wasn't like it's not like anyone showed up at our house and really gave condolences, you know. It was all just kind of over the phone and notes and things like that.
I've seen when we've had a couple of California women who have passed from during their surrogate pregnancies. And you see that it's interesting. Sometimes the agencies are the ones to start like a GoFundMe or something. And I always found that kind of interesting because they're profiting quite a bit off of these women. And then it's a GoFundMe for their families, and which is not enough. That doesn't bring back someone's life. So what would you tell... what is your stance now on surrogacy? And what would you tell other young moms who are considering going down this path or using it to kickstart maybe a more secure financial future or something?
Like 3 years ago, I was for it. I actually, most of my life had considered becoming a surrogate.
Really?
Because I thought what my mom did was heroic for a very long time. And I thought she just had a really bad unlikely outcome, that's not the normal. And then my family was like, absolutely not, you're not doing that. And then I thought, oh, I'll become an egg donor then. And that's when I really started doing research into like IVF, surrogacy, egg donating, and just seeing one, how greedy the industry really is. There, I'm sure there's some agencies out there that are very sweet people, have the best intentions, but most of it is greed. And then I was like, okay, you're renting someone's womb. And then that woman is going to go home and not have a baby that's going to latch onto her. She's going to have to pump and send milk over. Because I did see my mom milk, like pump a lot. And then we just had to keep it all frozen and send it.
Shipped it to New York. Wow.
Shipped it to New York overnight.
Wow.
It was quite the, like just seeing all the milk in our freezer was insane. And then again, there's no baby there to drink it. And like, I would sometimes have to like help her figure out what dates were what, as she was like, or she'd be like, okay, get me a bag or something like that. But as I did more research into the industry, I became very against it, especially since I'm noticing a lot of, especially millennial women are choosing surrogacy because they just don't want it, their bodies to change. Yeah. And they just don't want to have to stop what they were doing or kind of like, oh, I've already made my body look so good from going to the gym. I don't want to ruin it. But having a baby, which I'm like, no, it just evolves your body. Like with having a baby, it's a new chapter of being a woman. So I'm pretty anti-surrogacy. I'm not mad at the family that my mom helped out. I'm not mad at them because so much more research has came out in the coming years. She even advised me against becoming an egg donor because she just knows about the hormone treatments and just how intense it is. And she did not want me to go through that when I had brought it up to her.
It's another area where there's not enough research, because I think if they did the research, they'd find that it's not good for women.
Yeah.
It's not good for young, healthy women to inject themselves with hormones and release many eggs for someone else. It's not good. So
even just being a surrogate and just getting your body prepared for the baby and the hormones, it's one thing I will say, my mom did not get to live past to see how it affect her body in the long term. But one of her friends in the surrogacy, same company that she went through, is now having a lot of brain tumors related to all the hormones. But of course, because they have to sign all these clauses when they become a surrogate, they can't like do anything about it, which is just really heartbreaking to me that these people just have such giving hearts.
Right.
Because I mean, it's monetarily great, but at the end of the day, you're giving your body away because usually you have a good heart and you want to help other people. And then they end up with the most consequences and their family ends up with all these consequences, which is just really heartbreaking to see.
You can't monetize that. You can't monetize. So many people think that regulation is a key, but you cannot regulate the complications that arise. You can't regulate those things. So my argument there is prohibition for the whole thing. So is that kind of your view now too, or where?
Oh yeah, it is. I was like, I don't know how extreme we are here. So I don't want to completely throw that out. I am very abhorrently against it. I don't think it's not natural for a female body to go through that and not, one, not end up with a baby in your arms after. Hard enough just for women just to get pregnant naturally from the get-go, and then adding in all the different sciences to it, it just elevates the tension, I feel like, and the stress in the woman's lives, body. And then on top of that, when they're going through trauma, like this actual surrogate's going through trauma, but I went through so much trauma after losing my mom at such a young age. I've had to do years of therapy, a lot of counseling, a lot of going to the Lord and laying it at his feet with how painful it was just to lose my mom at such a young age. And I pray that people don't have to go through that. And that's why I'm speaking out today, because I don't want a mom just to think, oh, this will be good for another family, but your family needs you. So don't leave them because of that.
That's really well put. Your family needs you. Yeah.
Hard enough to just be a mom of who you own, like who's in your nest.
Yeah. But you're right. I think that the motivation there is these are servant-hearted people. Military wives are often targeted to be surrogates as well. One, because they're kind of already existing in that framework of like duty to serve. Their husbands are serving so they can serve, you know, and they're often employed, and it's a great way to make some extra money while their husbands are working. And so, I think there's this inside feeling of wanting to give life to someone else, wanting to give that joy. How do you think that this has affected your relationship, if at all, with your dad and your brother and your husband?
With my brother, we just started talking about it. He was super young. So our mom that my dad had remarried is like the best mom, and she actually adopted us.
Oh, wonderful.
So if anything ever happened to my dad, she would have been able to keep us. So I couldn't have asked for a better second mom, but we really did not talk about it. It was really hard for a long time. We didn't talk about my dad, and I still don't really talk about it. He's never really opened up about just the whole experience at whole. I would love to for him to open up about it, but I'm not going to push him because he's just a very reserved person. I'm sure if I asked him, he'd give a very honest truth about it, but I just don't want to push him because it's a very hard topic still for him to process, I think. For my husband, though, he's the easiest person to talk about it with, because he's just such a loving and understanding person, and I was very open about it from the beginning when we started dating. Even like last night, I was like crying because I was like, I don't know if I can tell my story to the whole world. And he's like, you can do this. Like, and just very supportive and prayed over me. So he's super easy to talk about it. Probably the hardest person still hard to talk about with is my granny, just because she gets very emotional about it still. Because I mean, that was her, she lost a baby.
Right.
In this whole process. Yeah. And that, I think, it's still so raw for her. And it's still heartbreaking to see her who has lost a child. Yeah. No matter how old your child is, it's hard to lose a child.
Right. You should, you know, I hear parents say, we always should go first, right? Like, that's the natural order. When young people die, it's like putting a period in the middle of a sentence. It doesn't belong there, you know? So it's hard. And especially in this situation where, yeah, she was, you know, giving another family children. So it makes it even more hard to navigate. And so you still have a relationship then with the family in New York?
I'm extremely close with them, which is, I know, very abnormal to most situations where most people, after you have the baby, it's kind of like touch and go. Or like your family isn't really involved, but I call their mom at least 4 to 5 times a month. Like, we're very close. She's always been helpful to me. When I was a kid, we weren't close. As a teenager, weren't close. But when I started my healing process through therapy about 4 or 5 years ago, that's when I really started to come back into contact with her, and wanted to be a part of the twins' lives and her life. But yeah, we talk all the time. She's been a health advocate for me when I was going through some really intense health issues. She was calling doctors for me. Like, she was getting things done. Yeah. Did research for me. And she always tells me, like, don't feel like you ever have to call me, but she wants to have a relationship with me if I want it. She's never been pushy. Like, she's always let me come to the table with like what I'm offering, but she's extremely close to my heart. And those girls are very close to my heart as well, just because I feel like that's what my mom would want.
Yeah.
For me to still be a light in their lives.
Yeah. Honor her and her legacy. I want to go backwards a little bit, because you touched on the fact that about, you know, an important aspect that I don't think we always consider is that these women are going home with empty arms, full breasts, changes to their body. Did you ever notice when your mom came home, besides the health issues she was facing, any like postpartum depression or any changes in her mood coming home with two guys?
I didn't notice any like postpartum depression, but I just noticed that while we were just sitting down, she's just tired and more glum than usual. Mm-hmm. Like when we did our normal, like sit down, watch TV time, I noticed she would sometimes get a little bit more emotional while watching Oprah or like HGTV. I know she would just get a little bit more emotional. And of course I would ask her if she's okay and try to hug her and bring her a snack. But yeah, I noticed she just is a little bit more glum, but not like a depression. It was interesting too, because on that side of my family, all the females have struggled with depression, but she never did.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know if she just hormonally never went through it yet, or because she was pregnant, it just hadn't happened. It wasn't, because she had passed away 3 weeks after the birth. So I just don't know if it was long enough after to really see those types of changes. And of course we had help from our family who came into town after the birth to make sure we were set.
Bed and care for, yeah.
Yeah. But I think because she had my brother, who's a toddler, kind of still, he was such a mama's boy, still being very clingy. I think that actually really helped that she still had somewhat of a baby to hold. Yeah. And to be close.
Yeah, a cuddler. Yeah. So this has been some time now. You're a young adult now. Do you think that things have really changed? Like, before, you know, you had said you didn't think your mother had been, were told the risks and it was very glossed over. Do you think that's still the case? I mean, we're now, what, 10 years, 13 years beyond that. And
what do you think? It's gotten worse.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten worse because people like the Kardashians make it look so glamorized. People like celebrities are very open now about having surrogates and how much money these women are being paid to be their surrogates. Mm-hmm. They make it look so glamorized. I have friends who talk about maybe wanting to have a surrogate and I have to put my foot down, and I usually try to be very, nice, in social settings, but I'm very intense about this topic because I experienced the loss from it. And I just don't want to see it happen again. Mm-hmm. I think social media has really also harmed this experience with robbing women of just having a natural birth and seeing kind of how their bodies change after. Because with social media, there's women who can afford to go get a plastic surgery and get like the mommy makeover literally right after they have their baby and put it on social media. So women are expecting to look like that. So they're like, well, if I can't actually look like that, I'll just pay someone to go through the ugliness for me. Or they're too scared because there just isn't enough. I feel like people aren't getting the literature of how beautiful having a birth can be. And I know people have had really rough pregnancy journeys or even birthing stories, but there's already so many people who have had amazing birthing stories and amazing pregnancies, and getting the gift of a baby afterwards is amazing. And on top of that, there's so many babies that need to be adopted. And I really feel for people who are having infertility issues, because I know that's a struggle, because I know most of us are just put on the pill immediately, and then it messes up your hormones and then you can't have a baby later on. But then there's so many babies who do need a home and do need to be loved, and you still have the power inside of you because you're a woman to nurture someone who needs it.
And on top of that, I had an interview, and I can't remember now who it was with, but we had a woman that I spoke with, and she talked about how we've gotten away from a society of mothering other children, right? Like, so I was an aunt for a really long time. And like, to me, that was the greatest role on earth. I loved being an aunt. And I was really like, a second mom, you know, to these kiddos. And on top of that, not only like helping mother and, you know, being part of a tribe, but really understanding and putting our arms around those women who are going through infertility. We put so much pressure on women to be this and to be that. And one of those things can be to bear and raise children, and especially in the church. And so I think it's important that we put our arms around and we navigate through infertility. We don't just purchase someone else's body to do it. You know, there's got to be other ways to navigate life without a biological child. So
I completely agree with that. I was a nanny for the longest time. That always filled my baby cup. I'm still really young, but and want my own kids later. But whenever I need my baby cup filled, I just go love on other babies. And moms need help. Like, it can't all come from them. I completely agree with just a community of women coming around. That was one blessing I for sure had, is after I lost my mom, I had so many women I could go to get love and advice and nurturing from, or just even a slap around, like, get yourself together. Like, you are messing up, that a mom would normally do. And I had my mom that my dad remarried, who's just awesome. Of course, it's sometimes still hard because it's something about having like the connection with like your mom, but I couldn't have asked for anyone better. Like, I never saw her as a stepmom. I know people who've had horror stories from stepmoms, and I never experienced that, which was a blessing all in itself. But I think I completely agree with you about women just coming around other women, especially in those really hard times of infertility. I know people in the church who've had struggles with infertility, adopted, and I've babysat their babies, and it's still, they're no less of a mom than if she pushed them out herself. And it's so beautiful to see people like that love on kids who really need it.
So our time is running close to an end. I want to open up kind of the floor to anything else that you'd like to share about your mother, about the experience that you had kind of secondhand with surrogacy. So anything at all that you'd like to share or tell our audience, the floor is yours, Jada.
I first have to say that my mom was just such a giving and loving person. Like, that is the biggest quality. I asked my granny the other day, like, oh, is there anything you want me to say for you? And she said, just your mom and her sister, my aunt, are just two of the most giving people that she's ever met. And one thing that my husband says is he just thinks she's too good for this world. And it's sad that she had to leave, but I'm here telling this story now, and it's someone's going to hear it, and it's going to impact them somehow, whether it wards them from using a surrogate or becoming a surrogate, or just if they know someone. Like, I just really wanted my story to help others, because it's just a very difficult topic. Most people aren't free to open up about or to have a real conversation about that. These big life decisions affect other people. And there was a time where I was very mad at my mom. I was very angry at her for leaving me, but I forgave her and I've moved on. And you just have to heal from these issues. So if anyone ever has lost a mom to surrogacy, I'm really sorry for the things you're feeling, but you have to forgive and you have to look to the Lord to get healed from that hurt.
That's lovely. I'm really glad that you talked a little bit more about the kind of person your mother was and talked to Granny about. My mom was also Granny, so that's very interesting. I don't hear too many grannies. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for putting that in, because there are probably will be listeners who have lost their mother. So thank you for sharing your story and for being vulnerable and for making a tough decision to do this. So I appreciate it. And I hope our listeners do too. Again, I want to just thank you for taking the time today to meet with me and sharing your story. You're welcome to come on the show anytime you'd like to offer encouragement and to chat with me. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening to this episode. May we all continue to think beyond the masses here. So thank you, Jada.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.